The great American pastime, feeding our face, eating. And oh boy, how we love to eat. And eat. And eat. Most of us think of eating as one of the few pleasures of life that isn't immoral or illegal. And so, as the richest nation in the world, we indulge and indulge and indulge. At the same time, nearly half of all Americans suffer from at least one chronic disease or disability. Millions suffer from a whole host of modern diseases, cancer, ulcers, heart disease. And sometimes we wonder, could we in this modern, affluent age be overfed and undernourished? How does it happen that some people appear to be healthy and have supple and firm bodies, good health, lots of exercise, they're good-looking people that seem to just go through life with consummate ease, having no real physical debilities or problems, while other people are almost chronically ill, continually complaining of headaches and stomach aches, back aches, every kind of assorted and related pain? Their medicine chests are filled with every kind of pills they frequent, or maybe they even kind of haunt some of the health food stores where you find dozens of books on the subject and, of course, millions of pills and everything from carrot squeezers to, celery and lettuce juice. Why is it that one person seems to be healthy and filled with vigor while another is lethargic and flatulent and apathetic and about half alive? Is it the breaks? Is it good luck? You know, I've gotten letters from people because I can't help, well, I can help my health, but I guess I can't help the fact that I like to stay in good health because I feel good. So I exercise as much as I possibly can, including a good hour or an hour and a half of vigorous basketball as many days a week as I can get in. And when I do programs on problems of physical health, and recently I did quite a program, we had an awful lot of very horrible film, a documentary on the subject of world hunger in the aftermath of the Rome Conference on food. And we showed some of these terrible films from the Sub-Sahara with these little children, and we revealed how so much of the money that is supposed to go to feed the hungry and the starving people abroad finds itself into the pockets of some of the people who, in the corruption that exists in many nations in the periphery of Southeast Asia, India, and elsewhere, the money, the food that we want to send there doesn't always get to the people for whom it's intended. Boy, I got some scalding letters. One lady said, "What are you doing sitting there looking like you're eating pretty well? You don't look like you're starving to death. You're wearing and so on, but here are these poor little babies." And it really made her so angry because presumably I should appear like Gandhi the day before his death. I should come out in a loincloth. You can count all my ribs. I'm wizened. I'm sitting there in a halting little voice with a kind of a white, thin little mustache with only one hair left in the top of my head, maybe a ribbon in that. One snaggle tooth hanging limply there with its, you know, decayed and about ready to drop out. And that would qualify me to talk about all of this horrible starvation. I don't follow that reasoning. I don't think it's essential for me to starve to death in order to be able to talk about how horrible it is that other people are doing so. Nor is it essential for me to be in horribly poor health to talk about how those who are should have either been educated and given the knowledge and the information or the breaks, whatever you want to say, before they got in that condition. And those who are presently headed in that direction ought to be warned, don't continue to go that route. So with that apology, the book Healthier Living states, health is a fullness of life, the balanced output, the total harmony in as close accord as possible with the environment. Health is a product of harmony, more or less perfect, between man and his environment. But are we as a people in harmony with the laws that govern health? Because there are hidden, unseen laws, physical laws that work upon us. Maybe some of them are mental or spiritual or psychosomatic in nature, but they are living laws that govern health. The national health profile of Americans tells a tragic story. According to estimates by the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, over 96 million Americans, or about 5 out of 10, has one or more chronic diseases or impairments. 7 out of 10 persons over 45 years of age suffer with at least one chronic disease or disability. Over 2 million Americans see a doctor every day. That's a line of humanity stretching from San Diego to San Francisco, represents the number of people walking in to see a doctor every single day. About 30 million Americans are spending time in a hospital every year. That's 1,500,000 on any given day. This is equal to the entire population of the city of Detroit. Approximately 15 million surgical operations are performed annually in the United States. And the American diet, that's a national disaster. You hear all the cartoons, the comedies, you see the promos, and I'm not going to attack anybody. I mean, I will stop at some of the sandwich stands with everybody else, and I'll eat anything from the fried chicken to the instant hamburger with anybody else, but it certainly is not going to be a staple, a mainstay, or a continual thing in my diet. And they're certainly free to sell all of those things, but you do begin to wonder just about the nutrition. A noted French nutritionist stated in the Physiology of Taste, a book of his, and I quote, "The destiny of nations depends on the manner in which they nourish themselves. The United States is the most affluent country in the world. We could eat balanced, healthful foods, but in spite of the fact that we are able to afford it and are still able to afford to eat healthily even in the face of the higher prices of foods, if we were more selective and careful in the kind of diet that we chose, apparently most of us don't really think it is worth the effort to eat properly to ensure good health." Street interviews with people, by the way, tend to confirm this view.
You think the average American diet is a balanced one, or is it a gastronomical catastrophe?
Oh, it's probably the disaster of the century. You know, looking at breakfast, what we eat for breakfast is the biggest travesty. Fried eggs, fried potatoes, toast, coffee. There's a lot of starch there and very little real food value. I think breakfast is probably the biggest crime in the American diet.
I really don't know. I'd say it's a lot more fun eating stuff that's maybe not too good for you.
Oh, I think most of us are a little off in this area. I think we have too many sweets, too many rich foods, and not enough of the good basics. This is a common ailment with Americans, I think.
You're a European and you came to this country a number of years ago. How do you feel about America's physical fitness?
Well, the American people are eating too much. First of all, they don't walk enough. Second, too much meat, too much of everything, too much relaxing, and too many candies. Here I catch a cold and I eat like a pig because I've learned the American way.
And did you see some of those disappearing derrieres in the distance? That was the most incredible footage. And we didn't plan that, really. We did not pay those ladies to walk by. Incredible. Well, actually, A. Elliott Smith, formerly senior surgeon at Radcliffe Hospital, Oxford, studied the unsophisticated native peoples of Africa, and he noticed there the absence of modern diseases such as appendicitis, ulcers, diabetes, obesity, coronary thrombosis, dental decay, constipation, and the like. And these are modern diseases, diseases of the space age of we affluent people in the so-called developed world. But he also noted that these degenerative diseases increased dramatically as Western-type diets were introduced among these very, very aboriginal-type peoples. So we asked Dr. George Briggs, who is a nutritionist at the University of California at Berkeley, to evaluate the American diet.
How would you candidly evaluate or describe the average American diet?
Well, the average American diet is, in my estimation, just borderline. When you look at what people are eating nationally, over half of what we're eating is either calories from fat or carbohydrate like sugar, or starchy foods, including white flour.
Foodless foods, foods that are highly refined and processed, convenience foods, are they good for us?
Not as good as those that aren't as processed. Every time you process a food, every time you take a bean and blanch it and then can it and heat it or even treat it in any way, just let it sit around, some of the nutritive value is destroyed.
Is diet in any way associated with degenerative diseases?
Absolutely. A good article in the Scientific American this last April shows that the health care costs in this country are about $70 to $75 billion a year. This is about $350 per capita in the United States, and in other countries it's relatively the same. This amount of money could be saved if we would eat better, in part. Now, the degenerative diseases are very marked. In fact, this article points out that 83 out of every 100 male babies born today will die of a degenerative chronic disease. In other words, four-fifths of the people born today are going to die of some form of either a heart disease or diabetes or maybe cancer. I have been quoted widely as saying that I wouldn't feed the American diet to my dog. And I stick by this statement. It's absolutely true. I mean, we're eating so many empty calories, it would be a poor diet for a dog. I do this experimentally. I feed empty calories on good diets to animals, and they go to pieces. They do very poorly. So that's why I say we as humans should be eating as much good nutrition as our dogs on good dog foods are getting. And we're not doing it.
You don't really believe that, do you?
I absolutely do. From experimental work, I know that we're not eating as well as dogs who are fed commercial rations.
I know it sounds horrible, but a lot of poor people in the South in particular, and in the big city ghetto areas, have been proven to be eating dog and cat food. And the one commercial, I don't know which one it is, you know, where the wife looks at it and says, why, that's cereal, and then the other one that is supposed to be all meat. Maybe there's something to that. The learned doctor says that some people's pets are eating better than they do. Actually, it shouldn't be surprising because there are 10 times as many nutrition specialists working in the field of animal health as there are in human health. Knowledge of animal nutrition far surpasses that of human nutrition. The fact is that there are 44 essential nutrients the body must have. Animals get all of them in the usual diets because it's all balanced. They make sure they get them in there so their teeth don't fall out. They don't get cancer or diabetes or multiple sclerosis. You very seldom see dogs walking around with Parkinson's disease. But humans don't get that kind of a diet unless they're little tiny babies and they have a very conscientious mother who is very carefully looking at a nutrition table. We don't seem to realize that we are what we eat. You can get away with eating junk food for a while, but eventually it's simply going to catch up with you.
Certain things in life are more important than a chance meeting on the beach. Personal fitness, for instance. Running is one of the best forms of exercise, a key to good health. For a handy guide on how you can develop and maintain good health, request your free copy of 7 Laws of Radiant Health. Call toll-free 800-423-4444. 800-423-4444.
Let's go up there! Where are you? What are you waiting for? Let's go!
Good morning! Oh, did you know the elevator's out of order this morning?
What?
What kind of a bad joke is this? Oh,
All these stairs, the traffic, jams, and people not cooperating.
Oh, boy, those stairs. They better have an elevator fixed by noon.
I understand. Yes, I know it's a serious situation, Mr. Clyde. Could you hold on for just a second? Nancy! The correspondence is not in this Hastings sample and Clyde file. Will you go get the correspondence for me, please?
Well, I've checked the files twice and I've put everything together. That's all we have.
The correspondence isn't here. It's got to be out there, so go get it.
Well, then there's no more correspondence because it's
go get the correspondence, dummy!
Dummy?
Mr. Clyde, I wonder if it'd be all right if I just called you back in about 15 minutes. I've got a problem here that I need to resolve, and then I'll get back to you with the answers. Okay? Very good, Mr. Clyde. Come on.
Yeah? Telling me you got these good eyes, you can't follow a ball for beans.
If he could have known that that was going to happen a little bit ahead of that time, do you suppose he would have done anything about it? Probably a year's notice would have been needed. Maybe only a few months. Who knows? Maybe only a few days. It can be just that critical. That if a person can begin gradually to turn around these processes, even now building up inside his body, tension, stress, lack of sleep, lack of proper exercise, because playing pool and a little bit of golf once in a while, sporadically riding in the cart, is just not enough to do it. It seems like hardly a week goes by, but what in some field or another, I hear of someone who has recently been stricken with a heart attack. Including close personal friends. Recently, in a biennial flight review, we were trying to get a person who was type-rated for Fanjet Falcons on the West Coast, or who was actually an FAA designee or designated flight examiner, only to learn that one of the two gentlemen, I guess anywhere west of Memphis, who was able to do this, had been stricken with a heart attack. Here's a professional pilot, and so on. I hope he's getting better. But it's so indicative, and you, in your own personal circle of friends, no doubt know of people who have been stricken of heart attacks in the last very few years. We hear these statistics, but somehow it's always going to happen to the other guy. 60% of all U.S. deaths are from cardiovascular diseases, diseases of the heart or circulatory system. That's well over 1 million deaths yearly from heart attacks and circulatory problems. This towers over the next two leading causes of death, cancer, 19%, and accidents, only 7%. So again, let me repeat that most people in the United States die by proportion every year from heart and circulatory diseases and from all other causes combined. 1.5 million Americans in the 35 to 44 year age bracket have heart disease. Most of them may not even know about it because they simply don't go often enough for a checkup to find out. 2.7 million in the 45 to 54 age group suffer from some form of heart disease, and another 4 million from 55 to 64, and 4.5 million in the 65 to 74 bracket. That's an enormous number of people. And this is by no means limited to men and women in their 60s, 50s, 40s, or even 30s, because would you believe that in the pride of our youth, even in teenage and early 20s, many people are being afflicted by coronary heart disease? We asked Dr. Crowley about coronary disease in teenagers.
We don't know that much about pre-teenagers and teenagers, but we do know about the age group of 18 to 25, where some studies that have been very revealing in this regard have indicated that there is an advanced degree of arterial disease in these people. Now, these are people that are ostensibly healthy. Some of them have been Marine Corps pilots who have undergone coronary arteriography. and have been found to have extensive coronary disease. Some have been soldiers killed in the battlefield who have been found to have extensive coronary artery disease. So these are America's finest, are healthy teenagers or post-teenagers who seem to be perfectly well. In fact, this is very much what the problem with coronary disease is. It's an iceberg, and we only see what's on the surface when some major attack occurs, such as a heart attack.
Tell us, when we find the flower of our nation with hidden symptoms of heart disease, does it tell us anything about our lifestyle?
For example, I think the diet is one of the things that has come most into focus recently. We all are concerned about what we eat, and I think if we look at what our teenagers are consuming, the hamburgers, the french fries, the milkshakes, the donuts, there's a lot of saturated fat, a lot of animal fat in the preparations that the teenager uses as a staple food supply. I think that this tells us that perhaps this is wrong. We can't be certain.
Actually, Americans could use this time of the soaring costs of food to completely reorder their diets. And they could actually come out an awful lot better for the exercise. That is, more selective buying of those things which are more nutritious, and staying away from the fats and the starches and the sugars with which we literally fill ourselves every single year, we would be so much better off. And good eating does not need to be very, very expensive. Every single issue in The Plain Truth, which has now gone tabloid, as you can see, which opens this way and then folds out like a newspaper, we're going to be having articles on personal and public health in the United States. This shows you the second edition for February. We're coming out twice a month, twice as often, and about twice the impact, with short, readable articles that really get to the heart of the problems that concern us every single day. In The Plain Truth, we're going to have articles on diet, health, exercise, and some of the diseases and how to avoid them, and articles which even include good advice and good suggestions about some of those very practical things you can do. Be sure to get your copy of The Plain Truth.
Plain Truth. Plain Truth. Plain Truth. The international publication of understanding. Information you need in today's changing society. Reports on meetings with national leaders. Correspondents in all quarters of the globe report on current trends. Plain Truth. The journal you should read. Garner Ted Armstrong's analysis of important national and global issues. Read Plain Truth every 2 weeks at no cost to you. For your free subscription, call 800-423-4444. 800-423-4444. Toll free, that's 800-423-4444. Plain Truth.
You can head off a heart attack that might rob you of 10, 15, or 20 years of your life. You really can. It's very, very simple. It takes maybe a few minutes a day, and there's a way you can do it.
Harry, why is it that when you get to be as old as you and I are, that we kind of give up on exercise like some of these young people don't here in the background? What happens when you become, 25, 30 years of age?
Well, Tom, the basic problem with most of us, when we become 25, we tend to retire. And there is no reason for it, because one of the laws of exercise is that any time you do not use your body, that body begins to deteriorate. And there's no reason for it, because the body is like a fine-tuned machine, and it can keep on rolling as we begin to exercise it. And our problem is not so much that we can't do it, it's a matter that we've been miseducated, and we like to sit on our posterior, so to speak, and just not get involved in the program. There's no reason why we couldn't do it.
We are kind of a nation of sitters. Look at the spectator sports in this country. Just many, many thousands and millions of people just watch Sunday afternoon football, or they might watch basketball or whatever. And if we went out and got our exercise by walking or running or cycling, we'd be that much better off in this country.
This circulatory system must be worked in order that we may maintain any level of fitness. So it's an important aspect to have circulation. And how to get it? Well, you simply by walking. I feel that that's a good beginning, a real good beginning. Now, if he's got to the point where he can walk fairly well, let's say up to 12, 15 minutes straight at a pretty good clip, then he can begin to jog. And as you begin to jog, you can begin to sprint. But this is over a gradual period of time.
One of the real tragedies is the individual, however, who is out of shape and who sees his neighbors jogging and sees his neighbors playing tennis, who says, my goodness, here I haven't done that sort of thing for 10 years. I think next Sunday I'm going to resolve to run a mile. I used to be able to run a mile in 5 minutes and 30 seconds. I think I'll try for that time again. That's the one who's going to drop dead trying to achieve what he could 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And that's the individual who, if he's going to go into that vigorous an exercise program, he should have a very thorough checkout by a physician before embarking on it.
Doctors agree unanimously that the best way to keep in good health is a combination of right exercise and regular, consistent exercise with a basic good diet. And let's face it, you can eat your cheeseburgers and drink your malts, and you can eat a fairly bad diet. Doctors know that too. As long as you exercise and you keep that bad diet controlled by exercise. If you're doing both, you're doubly ahead. It's amazing to me is inexpensive, basically, as is the sport of tennis, and it's growing like mad, that even more people don't do it. But simple walking, especially if you heard there after you get a checkup to find out just how much you should begin if you're a little bit over the hill and you're a little bit, you know, obese and carrying too much weight with you, you've got to be careful. You can't try to do something like you remember when. You used to do it way back and then suddenly get out there and get yourself a beautiful new body in one day. But judging from the incredible amount of interest in sports in the United States, and the availability of the health salons, the reducing salons, these gyms that are all over our big cities, the tremendous interest in tennis and many other outdoor sports such as golf and the like today, it is amazing that we're in such bad health as a nation. There's no need for it whatsoever. You can begin today, tomorrow. But I would suggest, first of all, you go and get that physical checkup and find out exactly what is wrong. If you want really helpful, meaningful and in-depth information on this subject and others that are of vital interest to you, even global concern, the economy, pollution, our national health picture, so many other features of this world right now today, and what it means in the light of Bible prophecy, then you need your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth. And by the way, in this current number, we advertise on the back that toll-free number you can call. Operators are waiting right now. If you want to dial 800, if you live outside the state of California, dial 800-423-4444, and it's toll-free. Operators are waiting to take your calls. Free of charge, the Plain Truth coming out twice a month, tabloid now, and your free subscription is waiting for you. There is no charge to you, whatever. You can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, for The Plain Truth, and for the book that you saw announced on the 7 Laws of Radiant Health. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong, goodbye, friends.
All literature offered on the Garner Ted Armstrong program is free upon request. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Canadian viewers write Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. In the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, call 213-577-5225. Be sure to watch Garner Ted Armstrong again next week at this same time.